Okay, so heard the story of the lepers that Scott read, right? And I saw this great idea for children's ministry where every week a child would be asked to draw a picture for the cover of the bulletin based on the Bible reading for the week. And true story, child, this past couple of weeks, and this church is doing this, and someone had asked, and I don't know this young man, but his name was David, to draw a picture on this very Bible reading, and he heard the title of the story, but he didn't read the story, and this is what ended up on the bulletin. Jesus and the Leopard. He didn't read that it was lepers and not leopards, so there's no leopard story today. Sorry, animal fans. But I just thought that was so cute. I'm like, how can you not like the story of Jesus and the leopard? It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. However, it's not in the Bible, so can't do that. But leprosy in itself is not something we have to deal with. I mean, it's just not kind of a part of our reality at all. And so there might be some disconnect in thinking about it because it's so far removed from our experience, right? But it's not hard to imagine a disease that you'd want to have contact with. I mean, I'm case in point this morning, right? Think about, was it a year ago, 2 years ago with that Ebola breakout where folks were coming back from helping folks in Africa and the quarantines and is it going to spread and that kind of... I mean, it's that kind of feeling at the time of Jesus with folks who had leprosy. And they didn't mess with it. It could range from bad acne all the way to full-blown leprosy. It didn't make any difference. If you had that, you were not just having a bad day. You were having a bad rest of your life. Because you would be exiled and kicked out of town because they didn't want it to spread, even if it wasn't infectious, but because they didn't have doctors, that was the end of that. That's not just a bad day, it's a bad rest of your life. And I'm reminded of a guy who had it hard. Maybe you know about this guy. He was sitting in a bar, looking at his drink, looked despondent, just looked terrible, like he was having the worst day of his life. Sat there for a half an hour, not doing a thing, just staring. Just all in all, despair. And all of a sudden, this big, burly guy comes barging in, steps up next to him, grabs his drink, and gulps it down with one swallow. And with that, this guy bursts into tears. And the guy said, well, come on. I was just joking with you. I'll buy you another drink. It's not that big a deal. I can't stand to see a grown man this upset. And the guy said, well, it's not that. Today is the worst day of my life. I overslept. My alarm didn't go off. I missed an important meeting. My boss fired me. When I left the office, my car had been stolen. I took a cab to go home, and I left my wallet in the cab as he drove off. I walked in and found my spouse in the arms of another person. So I walked to the hardware store and then came here, and I've been sitting here thinking about taking my life when you come in and drink all my poison. We've all had bad days. Some people have bad seasons, and some people have bad lives. And it doesn't make any difference where we see ourselves on that perspective, or maybe not at all at this point. I think the lesson in the story of the leper and these 10 lepers is something we should kind of tuck away and hold on to, because there are some interesting insights that will help us when we go through hard times. And it begins with Jesus walking from Galilee in the north through Samaria down to Jerusalem. This is the part of the story where Jesus has set out for Jerusalem because he knows he is going to die for the sins of the world. And on this way, he has to pass through this in-between area called Samaria, where, and I don't have time to go into all the ins and outs of Samaritans, but let's just say that a simplified description would be the way Roman Catholics and Lutherans would treat each other in the earlier part of the 20th century. Yeah, we know you're Christian, but we don't want to mix with you, and don't do that, and you know, that's fine, but we don't mix, and I'm not sure what you do when you're in church, but it's not what we do. Well, Samaritans and Jews were like that. There were jokes. They believed in the same God. They worshiped the same God, but they wouldn't mix. And it is when Jesus is heading down from Galilee, right on the edge in Samaria, that he runs into these 10 lepers, one of them being a Samaritan. And he knew that they were scorned, outcasts, nobodies, nothing that they can do for themselves. They can't even go to town and ask for help because they've been exiled. And it says that when Jesus approached this town, that they stood off at a distance because they had to. Now the deal is, sometimes life is like that. Sometimes life is like that for us, is that we are off at a distance for any number of reasons. This is not about the finer points of dermatology, but it is the truth of human existence that sometimes we feel distant from God and from others. That it is a lonely time. That it is an alone time, whether it is an emotional thing going on with us, that we're upset, or it's a pride thing that won't allow us to reconnect. Sometimes it's a loss of something in our lives, and even when it's unexplainable, sometimes it is just depression. But however we get there, we feel like we're a million miles away from other people and maybe 2 million miles away from God. That you could be in a room with people and feel utterly alone because there's this barrier or this wall that cannot be scaled. And sometimes you don't want it to be. And the question is, when we stand off at a distance, how do we get beyond that? And this is the story that we hear. The first thing that they do is they called out. They called out from a distance. And when we are struggling, the best thing we can do is to swallow our pride, as I was talking to our kids today, and ask for help. Or to say, I'm going through a rough time. Because if we don't call out and we don't address it, very little will happen. Now, I don't know if you've ever read any of the Psalms, but there's a psalm that is so amazing that it describes God's attitude of when we're in trouble. It is Psalm 18, and it's the middle part of the psalm, and it is so vivid that I need to read it to you. Because these lepers call out, and then this mimics or this recalls God's attitude when we call out for help. In my distress, I called to the Lord. To my God, I cried for help, and from his temple, he heard my voice, and my cry to him reached his ears. But let me keep going. It's not on here, but let me just keep going. The earth trembled and quaked, and the foundations of the mountain shook. They trembled because he was angry. Smoke rose from his nostrils. Consuming fire came from his mouth. Burning coals blazed out of it. He parted the heavens and came down. Dark clouds were under his feet. He mounted the cherubim and flew. He soared on the wings of the wind. He made darkness his covering, his canopy around him, the dark rain clouds of the sky. He reached down from on high and took a hold of me. He drew me out of the deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemies, from my foes who were too strong for me. They confronted me in my day of disaster, but the Lord was my support. Have you ever heard imagery like that before? When we are in trouble, it upsets God. God suffers when we do. And it makes God sad, if not mad, when one of his dear children is in distress. So he comes down to make things right. And if he can't make them right, he stands with us. And we see that in the very story today of the lepers and Jesus. Jesus comes to us and he does not ignore the plea of these lepers. So the same thing that happens in the psalm is mimicked in this story of Jesus and these people. Someone called out and God responded. Now, the lepers probably had heard the reputation of Jesus, right? And they thought, well, if anybody has the power to do something, it has to be him. So they call out to him, and I will tell you that Jesus has that same power for us to walk with us, to be with us, and to give us strength in our time of distress. And so they call out and they say, have pity on us. And Jesus shows them mercy. Because pity is an interesting word, by the way. It is kind of the notion of no matter what our lives have been like before, and whether we deserve it or not, feel sorry for us. Be kind to us. And that's exactly what God is about. That God operates out of kindness and mercy, not out of duty or obligation. In one of the more obscure books of the New Testament, Titus, it is said, but when the kindness and love of our God, our Savior, appeared, he saved us, not because of the righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy. So what causes God to get off his throne and come to our rescue? But those who are in distress. And the kindness of God responds. And so Jesus shows them mercy. And he says to them, go show yourselves to the priests. And you can see in Leviticus what it says about getting an official cure is by having to go to the priests of Israel and have them look you over. And so Jesus gives them a choice. He says, you're healed, now go show you can do what you want. But the priests were the gatekeepers of who was acceptable and who was not. It was they alone who could allow the lepers to join the community again. It was the power that they held, but the power they did not have was the power to heal. That only resides with Jesus. And it is also the power of God that allows reconciliation to happen, because this is not just a healing story. This is about Jesus moving people from isolation back into community. This is more than a clearasil moment. This is more than just a little bit of benzoyl peroxide and you're on your way. It is Jesus who reconnects them to life itself. I mean, you know the hierarchy of needs by Maslow. Beyond food, shelter, and clothing, love and belonging are the next most important things to survive. And this is what he is giving them. The ability to reconnect in community as opposed to being alone or in a small group, that they can actually kind of reassimilate and be in a larger community. It reminds me of kind of the notion of community and how important it is back when they developed the IQ test, one of the things that the researchers did was they wanted to kind of get a baseline for all different types of groups of people, right? So men, women, ethnic groups, children, they just kind of wanted to get a baseline of kind of where IQ fits on a whole host of folks. And including that they even took some time to do a baseline IQ intelligent quotient test with the Hopi tribe, okay? So they're giving this test in a classroom, I suppose, I don't know. And once the test is administered, they start talking to each other. I mean, they start like sharing answers. And of course, you know, the white European male American is like, well, this is an individual test. You can't talk to the people in the room. This is about what you can do, not what they can do. And you can't share answers. That, you know, everybody does their own work. And the response to that was interesting. They refused to take the test because this is kind of the summation of what happened in that moment. It is not important that I'm smarter than my brother or my brother is smarter than me. It is only important what we can do together. Now, that's the ethos of not just the Hopi Nation, but others as well, that it's not about individual achievement, but of being a part of something larger than yourself. And, you know, and honestly, with American culture being kind of focused on me, individual achievement, we lose some of that. But it is a reminder within the Christian church that we are in this together and not about individual achievements. And so when Jesus heals these 10, he brings them back into community, and we should never downplay the importance of being connected. So they have this choice. Do they go? Do they stay with Jesus? Do they just say, heck with it, I'm going home? I mean, even as some of them were Samaritans, you don't even have to go to the priest of Israel. You just go home. You know about choice, folks. There's lots of choices out there. The choice of whether you're staying for lunch, the choice of am I going to trunk or treat, the choice to come to church this morning, the choice of what to do and who to cheer for in the playoffs now. It's been a rough week, right? I mean, you could say to yourself, well, we got one West Coast team left. No? Yeah? Where's Randy when I need him? You know, he's got his Cubs shirt on today. There we go. See, Randy's made a good choice. There we go. Life is filled with choice. Thank you, sir. Of course, our dear friend Walt hopefully does not have that much influence upstairs because he's a big Dodgers fan. But the point is made that this was just to get your attention. We have choices. The choice to engage or the choice to be apart, the choice to be an individual or choice to be in community. And these newly healed lepers had to make their choice, and they did, but one chose to come back. One says, forget the gatekeepers. I have found everything that I need in this person of Jesus. 1 in 10. 1 in 10. That sounds about right. 1 in 10, right? 1 in 10 get it. 1 in 10 knows where the love of God resides, and 90% miss what God is doing. So this one comes back, and I will tell you, folks, we are the 1 in 10 in this world. We are the ones who understand. We are the ones who also have been charged to share that love with others. Even Jesus, in a different parable, says this, for many are invited, but few are chosen, meaning it is the net is cast wide, but few see it, and they keep moving on. But the invitation is there. But when I think about, do I go to the temple, or do I just stay with Jesus, I can't help but think about this documentary we watched a couple of weeks ago on Wednesday night here in the Fireside, which you can check it out of the library, called When God Left the Building. It talks about why Christian church has been declining in the U.S., and one of the kind of the core teachings in this, there are several, but one of them is that when we start to value the preservation of the institution of church over Jesus, there will be problems. That trouble always follows when it's about institutional survival over following Jesus. And in some odd, twisted way, this is the story here, that 9 seek institutional approval and 1 follows Jesus. He doesn't care if he has a seal of approval or if he's doing things the right way or in the right order or whatever. He needs to be with Jesus. Which is a reminder that everything we do here at Bethel, our buildings, our school, the ministries that we do, they are only tools. And when we start to value the tool over the tool maker, we have a problem. I'm not saying we do, but it's something to keep in mind. So 10 were cured, but 1 was healed. 1 was healed. And when he came back, Jesus said, your faith has made you well, which is a different way of saying your faith has made you complete. Your faith has made you whole. And there's even some connotations of kind of being saved too in that. So here's what I tell you. Being cured is a good thing, but do you know what's better? Being healed, being complete, being whole, and being at the feet of Jesus. Amen.